It's been nearly a year since many Americans started working from home because of the pandemic. And if you're fortunate enough to be one of them, you might be part of the next industrial revolution. That's the prediction from Atlantic writer Derek Thompson, who also says that revolution will be bigger than you think. Derek Thompson, welcome back.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And I presume you're joining us from your home in Washington.
Yes, I am in Washington, D.C. That's right.
You know, it's interesting, Derek. Remote work now seems completely doable for millions of Americans. Why did it seem so much less possible pre-pandemic?
Yeah. I want to first say, you said it right there, for millions of Americans. Not everyone can work remotely. People who work in retail, people who are, you know, brain surgeons can't do remote work the same way that someone in media can. But what I am saying in this piece is that there is an industrial revolution afoot in the white-collar economy, in the knowledge worker economy, such that I think even after this pandemic is over, you could see 10 to 20% of that workforce remain remote in a way that could be really significant. The reason this didn't happen before the pandemic, I think, had nothing to do with technology. Skype existed, Zoom existed, people just weren't using it in lieu of the sort of meetings and lunch conferences that often contextualized their work. And I think that it's because, as the economist David Autor told me, remote work had a telephone problem. So in the 1860s, telephone technology is invented. It is 80 years before half of Americans have a telephone. 80 Wow. years. And the reason was that if you're a typical American living on a farm in the 1870s, you don't know anyone with a telephone, so you're not going to use one, right? So there's a coordination problem around telephones. I think it was the same with remote work. We didn't realize that anyone else around us knew how to use the tools that together comprise the remote work portfolio. The most important outcome of the pandemic was not that it taught you how to Zoom, but that it taught everyone else how to Zoom. Mm. And so you knew that going forward, we know that if we want to move any engagement, lunch, meeting to the web, to the internet, we know that person will have spent these 12, 15 months working online remotely.
Oh, that is interesting. And you know, to that point, Derek, I moved with my family from Boston to Phoenix in the middle of this pandemic. In fact, as a direct result of the pandemic, and now I go to work every day 2,000 miles away from most of my colleagues. And I bring that up because I am far from alone. A lot of people around the country have done that. What does that shift mean for the future of work? Is that the revolution you're talking about?
Right. You are alone, but joined in your aloneness by many other people who are moving to be alone from their companies. I totally agree. And, you know, your story, if I can sort of center it for a bit, I think it's a really great example of how this revolution that I'm describing is not branching off from history so much as it's accelerating it. For years, I've come on this show and talked today on Mondays about the general trend in American migration, which is people leaving the pricey cities of the coast, Boston, New York, right, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, and moving to the Sun Belt. You did this, and I think a lot of other people have done this, and their decision to do so has been accelerated by their knowledge that they can continue working with their company based on the coast no matter where they are. This loosens the tether between work and home and allows people to enjoy a job in Boston or San Francisco, even if they're based in Atlanta or Phoenix.
But wow, what repercussions that will have for places like New York and San Francisco, and also places on the interior like Cleveland and Phoenix.
Yeah, optimistically, for cities like New York and San Francisco, I think this could be a little bit like a forest fire effect, that for a year or so, you could have real transition problems as, you know, apartments go empty and offices go empty and prices fall. But then, look, new people are going to move into these cities, which are wonderful, old cities. People have been moving into them for decades because they're so wonderful, and they will continue moving into them. And prices, having bottomed, will begin to rise a little bit. But I do think that you're going to see the menu of superstar cities expand into Atlanta and Phoenix and Austin. You even see prices of homes being bidden up in places like Indianapolis and Kansas City. And I think that you could simply have a scenario which would be really good for regional inequality, or at least in terms of fixing regional inequality, for all of the sort of bright, talented Americans who used to cluster in a handful of cities to be spread out across the country, making all sorts of cities much richer than they otherwise would be if, say, everyone in media concentrated in three or four cities.
Oh, that's so interesting. So you see this as a positive for the country and for the economy. But what's to say, Derek, that companies won't just rush back to the old way of doing things when the pandemic is over, and they demand that their employees then come back to the office?
Well, look, everyone listening to me talking right now has as much vision of the future as I do, which is none whatsoever. I don't know for sure what's going to happen in 6 months. But here's my bottom line. It goes back to my first point. We're never going to forget that the last 12 months happened. In 2018, we didn't know that these 12 months would ever happen. We were all forced to leapfrog over the telephone problem, the coordination problem, the shared knowledge problem that everyone around us in our company now knows how to Zoom. So if we don't want to come into work, or we don't want to go out to lunch, or we don't want to go to that conference, we have utter confidence that that meeting, that conference can be put online. That's the knowledge we're going to have going forward.
Derek Thompson at The Atlantic, always giving us good food for thought. Thank you so much.
Thank you.